Welcome to Hip Hop Movie Club, the show that harmonizes the rhythm of hip hop with the magic of movies. We're three old heads who put their old heads together to vibe on these films for you. I'm Dino Wright, podcaster, filmmaker, longtime hip hop fan, and I was hyped to attend our guest's event a couple weeks ago on the history of sampling.
I'm JB, 80s and 90s nostalgia junkie, longtime hip hop fan, and I was just recently turned on to Indian rapper Broda V by a coworker who lives in Noida, India.
Yo, I'm Boogie, DJ, longtime hip hop fan. And at the time of this recording, I'm so hyped for tomorrow night's in-person event. We're doing an in-theater screening of the classic film Juice, followed by a talk back with us. If you're around, check it out.
Today, we have a special honor to speak with the co-hosts of the Serious Rap Shit podcast, Philly Guys John Morrison and Josh Lighty. Josh joined Raj Haldar, aka rapper Lush Life, on a pilgrimage back to his family's homeland of India to document the hip-hop culture throughout the nation there. Their result, an engrossing documentary to share with the world called Another Word for Paradise. In this episode, we'll answer the question, why is India one of the next big spots for hip-hop?
All right, welcome, guys. Thank you for joining us today. Appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Of course. So first question I have, and you guys can take turns or what have you. How did this trip to India come about? Like, who had the idea for the documentary? Was it Raj's idea, Lush Life? Are you guys tight with him? You want to kick it off, Josh or John?
You want me to go?
Either one, doesn't matter. You can go, bro.
Lush Life, Raj is a very good friend of ours. It's funny because Josh and I were actually fans of his music before we became friends, and he was a really big fan of our podcast. So he got booked to do a tour in India. He'd never performed there. His parents are from India, and he approached us with this idea, like, yo, and Josh can fill in some more details here, but basically Raj approached us like, yo, why don't we do a tour documentary when I go over here to India to perform these series of concerts?
Yeah. Basically, he was doing a set of shows for there's a beer company out of India called Bira. And they were doing an April Fool's Fest. So like they were doing a set of tour stops that led up to this big festival on April 1st. And so basically he approached us middle of February or something of 2018 and was like, hey, literally the text was like, hey, do you guys want to go do a documentary in India? And go shoot a documentary in India, and we were like, "No, like, no, I have no interest in doing that."
Doesn't make sense.
I get those texts all the time. It's so annoying. Yeah, like,
but mind you, we had not made films before.
No,
this.
Like, we've never done anything like this. We were only like we had only been doing the podcast for a little over a year. We started toward the end of 2016, so it was February of 2018 when we got asked, we were like, yeah, let's do it. So we were like we started like doing like a shit ton of research and watching, like, we didn't know if we were going to be shooting it. Like, we had no idea of any, like, we just were like, first of all, like, who doesn't say yes at that opportunity, right? Like, yeah. I've never been anywhere. Like, the furthest I've been is Puerto Rico. So I've never been anywhere like really outside of the United States. So there was absolutely nothing in me that was like, yeah, nah, I don't want to do that. Like, it was like,
I pass. Yeah,
no. Yeah, it was like, I mean, I didn't have a pass. We didn't have passports.
In all fairness, like, I had a passport. Mine was expired, though.
Yes, yours was expired. I had no passport. Like, where was I going? Like, you know what I mean? I was a hooligan from Philly, so So that was February. We left the trip left at the end of March, so like, yeah, we had like 6 weeks essentially to like get stuff prepared.
Nowadays, you can't get a passport that quick because we try. It's like 3 months minimum. We got to pay a crazy premium. You guys, maybe back
we
then.
We did it. We had, we were very lucky.
Yeah.
That the beer company was like footing the bill for all of this. So they like rushed our visas and rushed our like passports. They were able to like put a rush on things.
Hired a film crew on ground in India to tour around and shoot this whole thing.
Yeah.
Because it would have been us with like camcorders trying
to figure it out. They had a film crew that we met with when we landed. We met, so then to like lead up to the process, do you want to start telling?
I can jump in here. So we get the text from Raj. We sit down and we talk about it. And we're like, yeah, let's do it. Let's go shoot a documentary in India. This is February. I'm also, I start feeling like a little sick, like I got the flu. And I'm like, man, this flu, it won't like shake me. Flu turns into like a headache. It's like a persistent headache. And I'm like, man, this headache is like really like beating me down. Even if you look at my passport photo, I won't show you, but if you look at my photo, I look like dead in the eyes because I was like sick as a dog trying to get this passport so we can go to India. So maybe 2 weeks, I think, before we were supposed to be on a plane, I'm sitting in my house. And my fiance is like looking at me and she's like, yo, she's like, talk to me. Like, I'm like, what do you want to talk about? She's like, tell me about like a TV show that you like. And mind you, this is after a couple weeks of like a persistent headache. Like, I'm like, I went to emergency. They didn't do anything, sent me back home. So we're sitting in the house and she's looking at me. She asked me to just talk to her. So I'm talking about Atlanta because I think Atlanta season two was about to come out. Yeah.
Yep.
So I'm talking to her about Atlanta. I'm like, yo, I'm excited. Da, 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 I love this show. And I think that I'm talking to her like I'm talking with y'all. But apparently what was coming out was gobbledygook. So long story short, I had viral meningitis. So my brain, my spine was inflamed. And my brain was swollen, essentially. And she looks at me. She's like, we got to go to the hospital now. So we, I kind of like make my way down the stairs. And then from there, everything gets like real foggy. So long story short, I was in the hospital, swollen brain, collapsed lung. Hallucinations, weeks of hallucinations. Josh was there. He remember I was out of my fucking mind. Because as you know, what happens with meningitis sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I came out of all of that stuff and I was in the hospital and my legs didn't work. So long story short, I had to rehab. You know what I'm saying? And it's crazy because at one point, I'm still a little wonky, like I'm still hallucinating a little bit. I'm still a little bit out of it. And I remember talking to one of the neuro doctors and I'm like, yo, my man, I'm supposed to go to India in a week. Can I get my shots here? And they're looking at me like, you ain't going to no fucking India. You're not going anywhere. So, you know, long story short, I did end up rehabbing. A lot of the episodes, we took a long break. Josh had to go to India. I had to rehab. But even like some of those like post break episodes, I'm in a wheelchair while we're recording that. You know what I mean? It was a long process to like relearn how to walk, you know, something I hadn't done since I was a baby, like learn how to walk. It's like it was really like an ordeal. And that kept me from going to India. So Josh and Raj went, rocked it out, brought the footage back. And literally, we were sitting in my mom's living room going through footage. And I'm just in a wheelchair. Josh got to help me into the bathroom. My mom had to bathe me. It was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. But, you know, it ended up being the film that it was destined to be because all of that stuff had happened.
Yeah. So I think one thing people should know is like me and John have been friends for almost 30 years. So we've known each other longer than we have.
95?
Yeah, 95.
Something like that. Yeah.
So we've known each other for a very long time. So me and him have been best friends for a very long time. So March 2nd was the day he went into the hospital. I got a phone call from his fiance that morning. I was just coming off shift. I know it was March 2nd because it was my son's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And I was taking him to a Sixers game that night. So I remember like dead. I know. I remember the day. I remember the phone call. She called me and she was like, yo, he's not making sense. Da, 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 da. And I was like, all right, well, take him to the hospital. I'm going to go home and like take a nap. And then I'll get up before I go get my son. I'll come to the hospital. No, had no idea how bad it was going to be and stuff. And it was scary. It was scary, like obviously with like John's health. Like it was bad. It was like he said, hallucinations. Like I was in a room talking to him and we're talking about stuff that's not in the room and stuff. So yeah, like
it was
crazy. And John at that point, like I am a writer and I do interviews on a regular now and stuff. That point, you're talking 6 years ago now, I had never wrote anything. I had never asked a question in an interview. We didn't do interviews on the podcast. So that wasn't a thing I did. John was the journalist. John's the one who's the writer. He's the one who's like the brain of the operation. I'm more of like the muscle. But he's, you know, it was really scary. The idea that like, yo, we're doing something I've never done before. It was a lot more comfortable to do it with my best friend. Like, all right, well, it'll be me and him doing it together. So if we look like idiots, we'll look like idiots together.
Yeah. Well, that's crazy.
But, so right before we left to go shoot, John had got better, like you said, about a week before, like really started to come around mentally, everything like that. And I still at that point was like, I don't know if I feel good leaving to do this and he's not with me, because like we're doing this together. This is our thing together. We started our media group, Culture Cypher Media, together, and like this is our thing. How can I can't go by myself. I really felt that way. I felt really weird about going without him. And I asked him before we left. I was like, you know, you can testify to this. I was like, yo, is it cool if I go? Like, do you think it's okay? And he told me like, you have to, like, I can't go.
Gotta go. Yeah.
Yeah. He was like, I can't go. Like, what are you not going to go? Like, you have to go do it for us. Cause I can't go. And there's a scene in the documentary that like, I feel like really it was important to me. There's a scene where I'm tagging a wall in, Bangalore, and like, it says John and Josh SRS.
I saw that.
Like,
yeah.
For me, it was important. Like he was there with us through the whole thing. You know what I mean? And like, it was impossible. I couldn't, like, my phone was like a brick. It was a camera essentially in India. I had no, like, I didn't have international calling. So like, I'm sending emails back and forth to like family and friends. I'm checking on John through email and stuff, and like trying to send some stuff back to him. And like, when I came back, he had been released from the hospital and he was in the rehab at that point.
Yeah.
And like, I came to the rehab when I got home, like, oh, look, like, this is like the stuff that we shot, blah, 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 like sharing all the information with him. And it was really important for me, like, that he was there for this, like, as much as like I could make him there for it. You know what I mean?
That's an amazing story. Thank goodness you made the full recovery, and you know, it all turned out as it did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then
thanks for sharing that. Yeah.
We're working on a new documentary. Ooh. And then when we went to go shoot, one of the first days to shoot the new documentary, I had a couple back surgeries a couple years ago. And on the second back surgery, I ended up getting an infection from it, bacterial infection. And I had to have an emergency surgery because, like, I had Klebsiella, and that shit can, like, Until you were like paralyzed and shit. And like I've literally said to John, like, we really have to like stop making documentaries when we're like, and then have like life altering situations happen every time we get ready to start a new movie project.
Yeah. This might not be the lane for us.
Is God talking to us? Like, is God saying like, you guys aren't supposed to do this?
Don't make any movies.
Yeah, I've gotten signs in a whole other way, but like this one is really standing out.
Yeah,
you're really suffering for your art.
Yeah,
right.
Seriously. Yes, absolutely. Crazy.
Well, maybe John had to do a solo. Maybe it was his turn to do the solo voice. Sure.
Yeah.
Well, he did. He went and shot while I was in the hospital. Okay. He went to shoot stuff while I was in the hospital. Like, one thing that I really love is and I guess this is comes from a situation of like me and him being friends for so long, right? We will. Like that's my brother for real. Like I've known him more than half my life. Like I've known him more than I've known my like haven't known him, right? So for me, it's like, oh no, like if I'm down, he's there to take it up. If I'm like, and that's just how we're gonna rock. And we're really good at like filling in each other's like bad spots, like, you know what I mean? Which I think makes a good team.
Yeah. Definitely. So now going back to the hip hop culture in India. What was your biggest takeaway? If you had to just condense it into one statement, a few words or so, like what's your biggest takeaway that you took from that trip about hip hop culture?
Admiration. They're not as much now, but like 6 years ago when we shot this, it was so infantile. It was still very small. Like to put, like they didn't have, like you didn't get like hip hop played on the radio there really. There wasn't that kind of scene there. It was just starting, like, oh, it's a hip hop night on like a Tuesday. You know what I mean? Like it was just starting, but I admired like what they had to learn. We interview a rapper in there, Prob Deep, in the documentary. And I don't remember if it made the documentary. I don't think it did. But he talked to me about one of the first like exposures to hip hop for him was the 8 Mile movie.
It's crazy to me.
Yeah. So yeah. Like they had just like just started really like learning the culture, so the culture was still really new. Like dance culture there, like there was the dance culture, but like the emceeing and like the producing beats and all that kind of stuff was still very, very much in its infancy. And so I admired, like, oh man, like you guys have so like I'm gonna be able to watch this scene completely grow from the ground up. Mm-hmm. We talked to Mo Josie in the documentary, and he mentions like, you know, and I'm seeing it now is like, because I'm still very much like I still have contact with like the crew and stuff like that, and follow people from over there that we interacted with. So like I see now, like, you know, a rapper like Prob Deep then has now like he has like 4 records or 5 records out, yeah, like, you know, in the 6 years and stuff. And that was his, like when he had just dropped his first record when we were interviewing him. He was touring it. So he, like Mo Josie in the documentary says, like, you know, a Divine, a Raju Kumari, a Prob Deep, like they're going to be the rappers that like the little kids that are trying to do it now, they're looking up to them. And yeah, it was really dope to see like a Raja Kumari and a Divine, who we didn't interview, but he was at the April Fool's Fest. He like they're signed to Mass Appeal now. And like, you know what I mean? Like they're going to be the people that like the younger artists are looking up to. And now they're going to continue to make more of their music. And like Mo Josie's Azadi Records that Prob Deep is on, it's like 10 artists deep now.
Nice.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah,
that you guys
and it
were
was like
their infancy.
It was
and
two when we interviewed
grow.
Them. So it's really like it's grown so much, and that's what I really was like. Oh man, like you guys are like gonna build your own like real culture, and that's gonna be so dope to. Like we would love to go back and like experience it now.
See how it's changed. Yeah.
That's awesome. So that's a good segue. My next question is like, so you said they were in infancy. Now they're growing a little bit. How do we put that in perspective in American terms? Like, are they like in the early 90s of hip hop? You know, we've had 50 years. If you talk about 73 being the origin, they're probably in that range. Like, all right, they're.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably up. Like early 90s, mid 90s era. Like okay. That's probably what era they're going into. But I also think it's so different now because of like their exposure is so different, right? Like the way hip hop traveled when we were kids is not how hip hop travels now. And
world, yeah.
Yeah. So the homogeny of like, of monoculture is so prevalent that I think they have essentially skipped a lot of levels, right? Because of the ability to like, you know, like, so me and John, when we were kids, we rapped and made, like, John made beats, I didn't, but like, you know what I mean? Like we were part of the culture, right? So if we wanted to record, you had to know somebody who had like a microphone and an ability to actually record you. Mm-hmm. Now, like any kid with a phone can do it, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
that's awesome. That's great because it gives a democracy of like availability of just mm-hmm. like anybody can do these kind of things now, right? Mm-hmm. So I think they were able to skip a lot. Like if you look at like videos from artists from India, like they look just as good as videos here because like they have the same ability to like shoot and do this stuff where you know, artists like especially like in our time, because like one thing like as Americans, I think it's very easy to just be like, oh well, like India is like a like one thing, like is India, as opposed to like with Prab, like Prab's from Mumbai. So like he has his thing, like his whole style, he's Sikh. So like there's a difference to him compared to a Divine who's from Delhi, and it's a different, there's just different culture. It's very similar to like, you know, Chicago and New York or Philly and Atlanta.
People.
Yeah. You know, and that's the thing too, where like the numbers of like people that were listening to hip hop then compared to what the numbers are now are just astronomical.
It's almost like you wish you could buy stock in Indian hip hop. Like I know that
this is
gonna grow.
There's such a market, right? Like because there's like Johnson, there's a billion people there, man. Like what you could the fraction that you have to hit to like do really well compared to like what our market would be, you know what I mean? It is completely different. And I think there's I definitely think there's an aspect that like they were so so able to like jump levels. They were able to hit what was the Mario shit, the world skips or whatever shit. Like, they were able to do a lot of that because of like technology, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's not
warp zones.
There's not that in like the present day landscape, there's not that reliance on labels, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, in right. order to distribute music, even the steps that you need to take from, you know, an idea to market have been like a lot of that stuff's been cut out. You know what I mean? I remember reading the Source magazine and people talking about meeting A&Rs on the street. You know what I'm saying? Like an A&R, you know, showing up at a club or a show and hearing an MC, and you gotta, you know, they gotta take that rapper to their boss and get a demo budget approved, and then you gotta, you know, record the demo, and then you gotta get that approved, and then you gotta do a single deal, and then maybe you do an album deal. That stuff is not a thing anymore, even on major labels. That that process has been greatly expedited. I don't know if that's the word I want to say, but it sped up that process. So when you're doing it independently, it's doubly sped up because you don't have any, you know, gatekeepers or anything, you any corporation that you have to go through.
So Josh, you kind of read my mind what I was going to ask next. In the documentary, you went to three main areas: Bangalore, which was described as like a Silicon Valley of India, Mumbai, which you talked about with Pravdeep, and then New Delhi. So you said the styles of hip hop are different in all the areas. And is that, that's because there's different either languages or dialects, I guess?
Yeah. There's like over 100 dialects spoken in India, I think. I could be even wrong on that number. It may be higher. There's a ton of dialects. I want to be really respectful because I'm not like, I'm not like a master. Right. But yeah, so it's just regional, right? Like there's, like Bangalore, when we, so Bangalore is the first city we went to. The documentary is essentially cut, like just essentially cut the same way we did the trip. It's, we did that, you know, it's linear, I guess that's right. Linear. So, I just basically just because aesthetically, I didn't want to cut it where we were wearing different clothes in different, like different, in, like, I don't know, like for me visually, that would have like threw me off.
The film follows the trip as it happens.
Yes.
You filmed it in sequence.
Yes. Yeah. And it's edited a little out. Like there's a couple things that happen in different orders and stuff like that. But like the cities are done the same way. So Bangalore is the first city we went to, and it's like we were there on like a Tuesday night, and we were like, hey, let's like go out, get drinks, and like, you know, enjoy the night, enjoy the town. And they were like, it's Tuesday in Bangalore, dude. Like, there's nothing happening. Like, it is a closed city, dude. Like, this isn't a party city. Mumbai is a party city. You go to Mumbai, and there's like, we were at like this, what's God's Plan had first dropped, Drake's God's Plan. And we went to some club in Mumbai that had like sand floors, like beach, like it was a beach. It was insane. Like it was full of like models. I have no, like did not belong in this place. But
was
we,
that
like,
the Lear Bar or was that the other?
No, bar? That was not the Lear Bar. The Lear Bar was back. So I will tell this story. Okay. John brings up the Lear Bar. Okay. A Lear Bar is essentially a version of a strip club. It's like a sanitized version of a strip club. The first night we were there, we asked where everything was, and they were like, there is no party. There's a bar down the street called Rough Riders, and next door there is a diner type thing, and you can go like get something to eat and then go there and then get something to eat. You get some drinks at the bar. So we're like, all right, we go down to Rough Riders. We walk in, as we're walking up, there's just like a bunch of dudes hanging outside. And we're like, what is this place? Like, this is weird. We go in and it's dark and there's just really loud music. And like, we walk in and there's like a dance floor kind of in the middle of the floor. And then like a gate, essentially, like around that floor. And then there were some seats along there where you could sit in along the floor. And then outside the gate, there was like stand up bar tables. So we just like post up at the bar tables. And in the middle of the floor, there's a bunch of like 20 something year old women, in some of them in saris, and then some of them in just like nightclub clothes, like just out on the town, and they're just dancing. And as you start to like coordinate, you go, it's just a bunch of old men sitting around here. A bunch of old men standing around too.
Just looking and leering.
Yes. Yeah. And so as our guide for the trip, Deepak, who was a dope dude, shout out to Deepak. He was, he worked for Beer, and he was like, oh my God, I think this is a Lear Bar. And we're like, what's that? And he's like, it's like a conservative version of a strip club. Like older people come in here, like the older uncles come in here and watch the young girls dance. And you can tip them. Like when they come, you have to give the security money. He gives you back money from the hotel that it was, right? And it said like Rough Riders Hotel, like Rough Riders use only, like hotel use only or something like that. But you can get that, and then you could throw that onto the girls and stuff. And so like we're in there and we're like, all right, well, if we're here, we're gonna have a good time. There's nobody touching anybody. It was like fairly respectful and shit. So we're just like having a good time, and girls kept coming over and looking at me, partially because tattoos are not huge in India. Like tattoo culture isn't real big, and big bushy beards are not like a really like it. So the combination was like really like weird to them. Like,
where are you from?
Yes, there was very much that kind of thing. We're like, wow, this is like a weird vibe or whatever, but whatever. We're in India. We're having a good time. We're going to enjoy it. We go next door. We go get some food. I see some of the girls who were in the bar, like trickling in with some, like with some guys and stuff. And I'm like, oh, you know, they're out just at no paying, no mind. The next night, the night you see in the first night you see in the documentary, we go to the Humming Tree to do a performance. Raj performs. As we're in the green room, we're like hanging out, we're talking. The woman who runs, one of the women who runs the Humming Tree came back and was like, what'd you guys do? Like when, you know, talking to us, and like, what'd you guys do yesterday or whatever? And we're like, oh, yesterday was our first day. We went to Rough Riders. And she was like, you guys went to a whorehouse?
Yeah.
Oh. And I'm like, what? And she was like, it's a whorehouse. And we were like, no, what are you talking about? Like,
it's a Lear bar.
Yeah, like it's a Lear bar. And then like all of a sudden, like the money that said hotel use only on it and all that kind of shit, like a lot of shit started to like make sense.
Oh, wow.
So like that was the first night. I was at a whorehouse the first night in India and had no idea about it. But it is very much it's different from city to city. Mumbai is very like, very like party-ish, very like, the dichotomy of like rich and poor is wildly on display in, Mumbai. Like it's very easy. There was a scene that we cut of like a Lamborghini that's just like parked next to like shanty houses and shit.
That's wild. Yeah, that's where you met the slum gods, so the guy that was really teaching the youth.
Akash Dunbar, yeah.
Yeah, that was really cool, that these kids have very little means and they're giving them a source of pride and confidence with hip-hop, which is cool. Yeah.
It was my favorite part of the trip, and I actually tried to get us to not go. We had met the first night, you see, like the first day, we had already met with a breakdancing crew,
right?
And crew. We had actually, when we did our research, me and John and Raj were doing our research before the trip. Slum Gods came up, right, John? I'm pretty sure we talked about them.
Mm-hmm.
So we had reached out to make contact with them because they did tours through Dravi as well, right? And so, when we were getting ready to go, they were like, yo, it's going to be like a 2-hour ride. Everything is like, traffic is insane in India. Mm-hmm. You can see it in the documentary. Everywhere you go is like an hour and change, like everywhere. And I was like, I really don't want to go like drive to this. And then we had another shoot to do. I was very tired. We were ripping and running. I mean, we were up from like the crack of dawn, shoot all day, perform at night, sleep for an hour, hop on a plane to the next city. So it was very like, I was just like, dude, I was tired, it was hot, and I was like, man, I really don't want to go to this. We already did a break dance crew, like maybe we shouldn't go. And I forget, I think it was the director was just like, yeah, we should go, we definitely should go see them, like it's gonna be cool, I'm telling you. So we're like, all right, let's go. And we went, and I mean, it was definitely the best experience we had there. The ending of the documentary, where Raj is rapping, that was shot with the kids in Dravi. When we shot, as we were shooting it, I remember standing there watching it and going like, this is going to be the end of the documentary.
I remember you telling me that too.
And then when we got the footage, and we were sitting in the car riding to the interview with Himesh, and we were looking at that, and me and Raj were like, "This is the end. This is it. Like, this is it." And that's like just looking at it, going like, "Yeah, this is it." And it was one of the things that was like, oh, the things were falling in place in my head finally of like how the film would be built and that kind of stuff. You can see like, and like, I'm sure like if you watch the documentary, knowing now, like I was unbearably nervous through most of that documentary of like being on camera. I'm not a person who liked to be on camera or anything like that. So I was very like uptight about it, but the going to Dravi was crazy. I'm still in contact with like the little girl who's doing like the head spin in there.
Oh, okay.
That's cool.
We follow each other on IG, like, and like now they're out in like the suburbs of India still doing like the Slum God stuff, and like she's still like breakdancing. All of them are still there, still doing that stuff. And you know, that's where they shot like Slum Guy, Slumdog Millionaire. Like that's where that's based. Yeah. That movie.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So like that, we talk about it in the documentary. That's why they're like reclaiming that. And like, you know, they're the slum gods as opposed to you know, one thing me and John and Raj talked about a lot, was not doing poverty porn. I think it's very easy when you're, doing like a travel log, and especially in a country like India where there is such a dichotomy between the rich and the poor, and you know, it's really easy to do like poverty porn to get like points, right?
Yeah,
we set in like we will not do that.
We talked about that a lot.
Yes, we were
making this
adamant film. Not to do that. We did not want to do that kind of thing. And I don't think like we do that with that. I think we try to show like this very hopeful and this beautiful thing, because I think that's what it is. And we really wanted that to come across.
It did. Oh, certainly. Yeah, I definitely thought so too.
Yeah. That was well done for sure. Wow. Yeah. Did you get a sense of how popular American rappers are to the Indian population over there? Or did you not really get that sense? Cause you were like engrossed in their hip hop scene.
No, we heard, because I heard like they're obviously like any performance, there's always like a DJ set at any performance, right? Yeah. So like, no, they're playing like regular hip hop. And when we go at night, we literally went out like every night after and we were there. Like, I mean, you know, listen, what were you going to do? Like not go enjoy the time you were there? Like, when am I ever going to get back to India? Like, you know what I mean? I don't know if I'll ever be able to go back. Right. So I'm going to go joy every minute I was there. And so we would go out every night. We'd be in bars and clubs and shit like that. And American hip hop was huge there. Like I said, God's Plan had just dropped, and like, it was playing everywhere we went. It was playing.
So they were playing the current stuff. Not like, okay. I was curious about that.
Based on your word, but I know God's Plan came out around that time, because I remember being in the hospital, and I was going to do an MRI, and they put me in the machine, and they asked me like, and went in with head trauma, they got to like lock you in. Mm-hmm. So I'm like in this thing, and I'm doing like 40 minutes at a time, like MRIs. And they asked me like, yo, do you want to listen to music in the headphones? I was like, yeah, sure. And it was like, the attending like technician was like, what kind of music do you want to hear? I was like, oh, you know, something chill, like play some jazz. And then God's plan. I asked for jazz and they just played Drake anyway. I'm like, oh my God. Now, literally every time I hear that song, I picture myself in an MRI machine. It's not pleasant.
Oh, wow. Well, that's funny.
Yeah, you know what? They were playing a lot. There was the I Am Just an Icon Living. Yeah, that song I think had just dropped. So that was huge. Yeah, like they played that a lot while we were there. They were playing a lot of current I think the homogeny of like monoculture is like so huge at this point. Like, yeah, they were playing like a lot of like the modern stuff.
So I like to give the listeners like a comparison too. So as far as like Prob Deep, who, you know, was at the time was up and coming. Now you said he's dropped like four albums. And which American rapper style does he most sound like, if you could possibly compare, if there's any comparison? He's got a good stage presence. I saw, you know.
Yes, he's a great performer. Amazing performer. Yeah. Honestly, maybe Childish Gambino. Like, a lot of their early stuff reminds me of like Bonfire and what's the name of that record? I love that record. I can't think of it. It's off like that off that album. Like a lot of that early stuff, and then like there's newer stuff that's very much like later Childish Gambino. He really kind of reminds me of Childish Gambino.
Nice. Cool. Just a couple more questions and then we can wrap. So the record label owner and the manager of Prob Deep, you said, was Mo Joshi. He was delightful. He was just a fountain of information. Like, I could listen to him. British guy.
That interview is like an hour long.
Oh,
like,
wow.
A lot of that interview is cut, but it literally is just like, we talked and just talked and talked and talked and talked and talked and talked. And like you said, yes, he would talk forever.
Yeah.
He was great. He was fantastic too with like, you know, we use a couple other songs that's in like the movie. So like, he was really cool about like just letting us like rock out with that. It's actually funny too, because there's like several versions of the actual documentary. There's a version that lives on Quincy Jones's streaming service, Quest TV, that doesn't have some of the songs, because like I pulled some stuff because it was like, well, if we're, you know, I didn't want to like with licensing stuff, I was worried. So like, there's that version. There's a version that has that has the one that's on YouTube is in three parts, and that has like some extra stuff in it. And then there's a whole version that we've sent that was in the film festivals that's like its own thing, that's like just the full film in one piece. So there's actually like several different like little versions of the film, which is actually kind of cool.
That's cool. So another thing about Mo Joshi, he referenced Sez on the Beat as being super integral to the growing popularity of hip hop in India. Like, he's the guy that helped spawn the popularity. Is there a U.S. equivalent of Sez, like what Sez has done for hip-hop in India? Is there someone in the U.S. is that like Dre or P. Diddy?
I actually have somebody in my head. I wonder, John, can you think of somebody like that?
Yeah, I don't know, because I don't know that there's any single equivalent. Marley, maybe.
You know, Marley. You know who I was thinking about, and it's more current, I guess. Like, not current. Not current. I was thinking Timberland, because like he launched that whole kind of Virginia sound wave type thing that came out.
A lot of people took his style too.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. Sez, I don't think is like as big in the scene right now, and that's partially just because like he's doing other stuff. Like, he's moved on to do other stuff, but he was like, when we were there, his name was the name we heard brought up a ton.
Nice.
He was like one of the first big like non like rapper names to kind of come out. Like, he's like the big he's the big first producer to come out of India type thing.
That's cool. So one of our final questions is, how do you think this trip changed Lush Life? How did it change him? He was in the element. He was enjoying it. Obviously, when he's performing, he's like, this is always, you know, because he hadn't been there in 10 years. That's his homeland. And he embraced the audience. They seemed to embrace him.
Josh, I don't know if you've talked to him about this. I haven't spoken to him about this.
So I spoke to him mostly about, like, you know, about the trip overall. It's like me and him came very close. Like me and John said, we were like friends at the time. Like, we were like super close. John like interviewed him and like had spent a little more time with him. I had like hung out with him a couple times, and me and John had hung out with him a couple times. But like, we were, I was still kind of not really like, you know, didn't really know him that well when we went. Raj is now one of our closest friends. It was a great experience to like, it was something that was, he expressed that, he had toured obviously with his music. He's like, I've never had a schedule like that where we were up all day shooting all day, then recording it, then like performing at night, and then like being on the road, and then like doing that over and over and over and over day after day. I do think it gave him, I know he said like when the first night in Bangalore, there were some people who knew his lyrics and he said it felt surreal to like hear like people in India rap his lyrics.
That had been crazy.
That's dope.
Yeah. And then like doing the actual big festival, because that was huge. That place was like, I don't think you don't even really get the scope of it in the film. I think we didn't get a really, one of the things was like, that was like, the shout out to the film crew. They were fucking running on fumes, because like when we slept for like an hour or two, they were up like transporting, like moving the footage from one drive to another drive, so they would have like space for the next day. Like they didn't sleep for like 7 days, man. They ran ragged. So toward the end, we were like, we ran with more of a skeleton crew. I don't think we got as much of the festival as we really wanted, but, the festival was packed, and like, I know like being in India and rocking in India was huge for him. And I'm sure like kind of felt like a culmination of sorts for him to like go to India and perform, go to the homeland and the motherland and like get to rock and do something that you love. It was really dope. And we got to experience so much cool shit over there. You know, they got to like teach me how to eat different shit there. I'm a very, like John knows me, I'm a super picky eater. I was super scared to go there and eat because I'm so picky. I have a really questionable stomach too. Like, and I was like super scared over there eating. And so it was, I know like it was one of the things, like John is way more adventurous eating. He would have like loved that shit way more than I would have.
As long as it ain't beef or pork, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like it's great over there, man. Like we went to Mumbai from Bangalore. We got up super early and we were in the airport like 7:30 in the morning, and we're like dying. We're like, yo, we gotta put, like, we had been drinking all night, like beer. We were drinking beer for free because the beer company sent us. So like we had all the beer we should drink. Been like all the weed we could smoke and shit. So it was like, it was a magical trip. And so like we got up, we were at the airport, and the only thing that was open was like this Indian restaurant. It was just restaurant, I guess, in India. And like they were serving like regular Indian food and stuff. And I was like, yo, I can't do spices. It's like 7 o'clock in the morning. I was like, and Deepak was like, yo, I don't want to do spices right now either. Let's get some KFC. So we got some KFC and it was the worst decision. It was so cool. Like airport KFC at 7:30 in the morning was a bad choice. Definitely should have went with just like a nice rice bowl or something. But we got that, and like it was the worst turbulence I've ever experienced flying. And we flew, when we were flying from Bangalore to Mumbai in this tiny plane. And I was legitimately scared. Like I was like, yo, we're gonna, because it was all mountains around us and shit. Like at least what I could see was like mountains. And I was like, yo, if we crash, we're gonna crash into mountains and die. Like I legitimately was scared on the plane, and it was not helped because I had like a belly full of greasy, nasty fried chicken at 7:30 in the morning.
Oh man!
So it was an adventure. It was an amazing trip. I'll say that definitely.
Yeah, it looked like it was awesome. I'm glad. I'm so glad you guys put this on film and that, right? You know, discovered you guys on this Art of Sampling show, and we were able to link up.
Thank you for having us. Like it was, just putting it all together, and like, you know, we had to learn to make a documentary to do this. Like, we didn't know how to do any of this stuff. We were supposed to start working on this documentary in like 2018, 2019, when Raj then gets the book deal, or Raj's book comes out. Raj is a children's book author as well, like New York Times bestselling author.
His career's like going crazy.
Yes. We were sitting down to edit this film, and the book was just getting ready to come out. And he just was like getting constantly called out of as we're sitting down going over footage. And so like when the pandemic hit, like me and John kind of just decided like, well, if we're ever going to make this, like we got to like make it. Because it's just going to sit. The footage will sit here and no one will ever see it. And so like I taught myself Final Cut Pro, and me and John wrote and went over footage and did a whole bunch of shit. We just taught ourselves how to make a documentary. And, you know, we're very proud of this project. It's definitely changed like the shape of what we're doing. We are working on a new film project now. We have a few other projects in the works as well. This is like really kind of like changed our lives.
That's amazing. Yeah. So I implore you all to watch Another Word for Paradise. We can put the YouTube links, or if you have a better link, we could put it in the show notes. Definitely.
Yeah. I would just do the YouTube. Like, it's the YouTube easiest links, way. Yeah. Yeah, okay. It's the easiest way.
We enjoyed it. I've been telling a lot of people about it. My son is going to school for film, and like I will show him as an example. He would enjoy it as well. Yeah.
I rewatched it today for this podcast. I hadn't watched it in a long time. And I obviously watch it with like, you know, I should have like cut that scene like a fraction of a second earlier. Like all that stuff has like now in my head, you know what I mean? Of like, oh, I could have cut that one like just a fraction of a second there, or like faded that song out just a little better here. But I mean, like, I still really am really, really proud of that project. We're going to be doing another thing here in Philly. You know, we'll definitely keep you guys. We'll let you guys know. We're definitely doing another thing about this film here in Philly soon. Nice. We'll just check us out. Serious Rap Shit. Social medias, Instagram and Twitter, Serious Rap Shit. And you know, if you want to follow us there, there's going to be some new stuff coming up. Like I said, we have the new film project.
Fantastic. Great.
Yeah, it's going to be dope.
Yeah, we'll definitely promote that.
Thank you. Never thought I'd make a film. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Talking about two dudes who grew up the furthest thing away from Hollywood. Like, none of that stuff ever. Yeah. Like, we didn't dream about this. Like, we dreamt of it. But, like, didn't think this would happen, right? Like this was something that, you know, we never thought would happen. You know, we're very thankful, and like, you know, I talk about this all the time. I mentioned it at the Art of Sampling talk. We're very grateful to be like to be a part of the culture that we love and like mm-hmm. that we admire, and to be a part of that and to contribute to it is a feeling that I can't like really even like explain.
Yeah.
It's a great feeling. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, y'all. Thank y'all so much.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you so much, Josh. Nice to meet you. And thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Be in touch. Thanks
nice
a lot.
Nice meeting you guys.
Yeah. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Hip Hop Movie Club is produced by your HHMCs, JB, Boogie, and Dino Wright. Theme music by Boogie. On March 27th, we are presenting a screening of the hip-hop film classic Crush Groove and a live talk back at the Frank Banco Alehouse Cinemas at Steel Stacks in Bethlehem, PA. Free tickets at steelstacks.org. And whether you're listening to the podcast or watching us on YouTube, we appreciate you. Thanks for tuning in.
And remember, don't hate, cultivate.
Cultivate.
Cultivate. Yes.